Hello, Gasheads, and welcome to this week's episode of Gascast. I'm your host, Nino, and joining me for this one is Willett.
Good evening.
And Weeksy.
Good evening.
So it's a three-man pod, but a two-mic pod. We're a microphone down, so Willett and Weeksy are sharing one.
Fighting over the mic.
Fighting over it. But yeah, we released a pod on Sunday, just gone, where we gave our thoughts on Barton's sacking. So we spoke for about an hour on that topic. This one, we're going to throw it forwards a little bit. So it's going to be three parts. Part one, we're going to chat about the Northampton game at the Mem last weekend. And then we're going to chat about Al-Saïd's interview in part two, mainly on the Mem redevelopment. And then in part three, we're going to go for the main topic, I suppose, which is the search for, obviously, Joey Barton's replacement. Weeksy, obviously, you weren't on the last pod that we did. Nope. Where we chatted about Barton. And I know you said in our group chat that you wanted to be on that one because you had some things you wanted to say.
Yeah.
So I thought, just before we get started on this one, I'd... Yeah. Throw it open to you to just give us your thoughts on the Barton dismissal, really.
Yeah, I think it's one of those surprise, not surprise moments. I wasn't expecting Joey to go anywhere for at least another couple of months until the Stevenage game on the Tuesday night. So I stand behind that, pretty much behind the home dugout, and just noticed that night that he didn't move, and I may have asked him that he might wish to consider standing up when we're 1-0 down against Stevenage in a polite way.
So how people on the East Terrace, whatever.
I told him to fucking stand up. But yeah, he's that night felt like it was the end. I think the performance suggested that to me. The atmosphere in the ground suggested it to me. And so yeah, I wasn't expecting him to go until after that night, and then a few of us did say, I think, when we're walking out, that might be it, I think. And
do you agree with the decision?
I had to think about it for a while, if I'm honest, just because...
I only ask you that because out of all of us probably at Gascast, I think you were the one who was probably most positive about it.
Yeah.
Up until right towards the end, maybe.
Yeah.
So I'm just interested to know whether you agreed with it, really, or whether you were still...
Do you know what? I did in the end.
You did?
And I had to ponder for a little bit. To be honest, when it's first announced, there was a bit of me, I was like, ah, have we made the right decision? Because I always liked the way we tried to play football, and I respected that we stuck to our guns, wanted to play football the right way, and I could really see what we were trying to do. But it became pretty obvious that we were struggling, and at the time, we're 16th in League One, which I agree isn't good enough with the budget and the players and the squad that we've got to our disposal. So, yeah, part of me was gutted because I thought I could see that we were going the right way, but then I understood and agreed with the decision. It was a pretty blunt ending against Stevenage, which we should be steamrolling them types of teams over. So, yeah, strange one, but the right decision, I thought.
Okay, cool. Right, let's crack on with this one then. So we're going to start, as I said, with that Northampton game. So we'll start with the stats from it, as always. So possession was 42% for Rovers, 58% for Northampton. Shots, 12 apiece. Shots on target, 6 for Rovers, 5 for Northampton. Big chances, 3 for Rovers, 2 for Northampton. And the XG was 2.13 for Rovers and 1.50 for Northampton. Weeksy, I'll come to you first again on this one. Just starting, not so much on the game, but just, I guess, the vibe around the Mem, really, because I don't know if it's just me and my kind of dislike of Barton, probably, but I thought the Mem just felt nicer, a nicer place to be.
I think the week leading up to the game, I thought was pretty vile on Twitter at times. So I was a little bit worried what the atmosphere would be like, but I actually thought it was quite good. Like you said, it was almost like a weight had been lifted. And as is always the way, you don't quite, in real life, what you see online doesn't quite transpire. It was, you know, I haven't seen any hatred at all since the beginning of it, or anyway, but I just thought it was very lighthearted. There's a brilliant rendition of When the Gas Go Marching In about 2 minutes before kickoff, which I've not heard before. I think us Rovers fans are really, really good at, when something happens and we realise we need to support the team, the place was up. And I thought, same as you, I thought it was a really good kind of like light atmosphere in a way. It's hard to explain really unless you were there, and I'm sure the people that are there would understand what we're trying to say with that. And
it just felt to me like everyone in that ground was 100% behind Mangs as well, which I've not felt that with Barton for a long time.
No,
you could almost feel the division on the terraces when Barton walks across the pitch. Some people are clapping him, other people don't want to. But with Mangs, everyone was right behind him.
And let's be fair, Mangs had a tough week. No matter what anybody thinks, him and Joey are good friends. And how would we feel if one of us lost our jobs in that, and then we took over that job? It's a tough week, isn't it?
It's an awkward one, isn't it, for him?
Yeah, and I thought he dealt with it really well, really professional. And he's one that I do think got our club, which is something that I still think you have to say about Joey. I did think he gave us that hope and belief that we could achieve something that we haven't done for 30, 40 years. So, and Mangs gets that. And whenever I've had any interaction with him, which is quite small, but I have a little bit, he's a top bloke. And I think Rovers fans get and understand that. And so it's nice to see everyone. He got a good reception, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Willett, this one was the first of a four-game run of, I'd say, pretty winnable-looking fixtures on paper. Obviously, Northampton were struggling. I thought you could kind of most of the game see why they were struggling as well. I don't think they looked like they had much, to be honest. But obviously, with what happened with Barton a few days earlier, just really important to get the 3 points. And obviously, it's another win at the Mem, which in the Mem form at the start of this season now is looking pretty good after another win there.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely tell there was a difference in the way we played, I thought. We looked a little bit nervous as well to begin with. There was a kind of, you know, that was a general sort of feeling around me that was like, oh, we're not quite, you know, don't look quite as slick. Because that was the one thing I'd always say under Barton, as much as I was, you know, in agreement with the decision, I always felt like the players were always playing to that instruction and they always were right behind the way in which we wanted to play. Whereas I did feel that against Northampton, it was a bit like, oh, hang on, we're doing something a bit different here. We're a little bit, you know, I mean, they were clearly told to keep hold of the ball. Like there were quite a few times where, you know, Connor Taylor would get it and he'd look to go forward and then he'd put his foot on it, go backwards, and it would wind a few people up, like get it forward. But clearly playing to a, you know, let's just be sensible here, which I think, again, under Barton, there was often that sort of chaotic feel about us. Like, we were always ready to just completely capitulate at any moment. But it was quite exciting because you never knew which way to go. We could win 5-0 or we could, you know, it could be 5-4 or whatever. You know, you just never knew what you were going to get. Whereas I felt kind of confident we were going to hold on in that game because we were very specific about how we were going to defend it. I didn't think much of Northampton, but I did feel we just managed that game out really well, considering the conditions were absolutely horrendous.
I was going to say, you two on the East Terrace must have got absolutely drenched.
No. Did you not? The stand did its job for once. Like, there was no wind or anything, so it just all came straight down. Okay. So we were pretty happy where we were. And actually, because of that, because normally you normally get, you know, a lashing from the rain, but, like, we didn't, and it also made me think, like, maybe the conditions aren't as bad as it was. And then I left the ground and you just saw this water rushing down Gloucester Road. I thought, blimey.
You could have got a canoe and sailed down Gloucester Road and, after that game.
And in years gone by, those games would have been caught off, you know. Like, that is something to say about the way the ground, the pitch has been, you know, it's just so vastly improved over the years. You wouldn't have noticed it. That pitch looked absolutely brilliant by the end. So, yeah, all in all, we have delighted with the day, really. Really good.
Yeah. Weeksy, obviously, being Mangs' first game, I went into it sort of thinking it's going to be interesting to see whether he just tries to keep everything exactly the same as it was, obviously under Barton, or whether he changes it a little bit. I thought it was interesting how the shape changed a little bit. And also, although at times we did sort of keep it and pass it around the back and Connor Taylor put his foot on the ball and wait for them to press him, blah, blah, blah. But at times as well, I thought we were quite a bit more direct in that game than we were a lot of the time under Barton and looked to get it forward quicker. So what were your kind of thoughts on the selection and the tactics that he employed?
I mean, as always, when the lineups were put out, I couldn't make head or tail of what formation it was going to be.
I've given up on that long ago.
It was going to be what? I mean, I don't think they're even in numerical order anymore. I have no idea what's going on. But what Mike said there, nail on the head, the first 5-10 minutes was a little bit cagey. And what, I think everybody, including the players, were wondering what it was going to be like. But for me, it was certainly a back to basics performance. It looked, to me anyway, like a pretty much straight 4-4-2.
Yeah.
and I think that was really sensible from Mangan. If we try to do the same thing and then get beat, I think, you know, for him, he's obviously going to want to enhance his career as well. And I thought it was quite clever of him to go to a normal 4-4-2 and just try and keep everything reasonably basic. And I think it really made us look quite solid, because even though we weren't playing well at times, I never, ever thought, even in the second half when we were struggling, I never thought we were in major trouble. I thought it looked like we could cope with everything that Northampton were going to chuck at us.
Always kind of felt like we had him at arm's length, I think, in the second half.
And I must say, I thought Finlay was much better. Much, much better, actually. And the back four looked solid. And again, I noticed Connor Taylor, you could just hear him just bellowing at the players. I just thought it was really good. And Collins, again, through the middle, looked like he was causing more problems. Looked more comfortable than being left out wide out on the left-hand side. The last few games under Barton, Giovanni Brown and Collins were so far away from Chris Martin. Chris Martin, it was just bouncing off of him and nobody was around. Probably bouncing off him is probably a bit harsh. He was flicking on and winning balls, to be fair to him. But then nobody was on the end of it. Where with Collins playing in and around him, we looked much more of a threat, I thought.
Mm.
And I thought it was really clever for Mangan and, you know, it worked well.
I thought it was just a bit more pragmatic. I felt like we pressed less.
Yeah.
Like, reading out the possession stats there, I don't think Northampton, from what I've remembered from the last 5-10 years, they've never been a side that have really wanted loads of the ball. They've always been quite a direct side themselves. So the fact that we were at home and they had more possession than us, I thought was also a switch from under Barton, where we would look to always want to have like 60% of the possession but not do a lot with it sometimes. Whereas this, I just thought we looked like we were happy just to sit back, not press as high, maybe be a bit more pragmatic and probably try and keep a clean sheet, which obviously we didn't manage, but it just all felt a bit more sensible, like you said.
I think the back four we had, if I remember rightly, was Friend, Cramer, Taylor and
Grant was at right back.
So it wasn't like we had flying fullbacks, was it? So I think that was a plan to have a solid platform and just try and go from there. With the attacking talent that we've got on the pitch, things should just happen and they should do so. Yeah, I thought it was really good. And like I said, probably bang on their pragmatic performance that was needed in the circumstances.
Willett, obviously, as we've said, kind of classic game of two halves, I would say. First half from Rovers after the nervy opening, really good. And obviously kick-started by that Chris Martin goal. Put us 1-0 up in the 10th minute. Lovely little flick, that.
Fantastic.
Great goal, wasn't it?
It was fantastic. I mean, like, that's what he does. He's just got that, he just oozes quality, really. I mean, it was interesting under Barton. I felt that, you know, he's obviously out there really trying to work hard, and you can see he's really trying. Kind of reminded me a little bit of Pittman,
a tiny bit.
But the thing about Pittman was he did score some cracking goals. He scored some goals, my Pittman. He also carrying a bit of timber, but he was a good player. When he had the ball within a foot of his, wherever he was.
Yeah, don't expect him to chase anything or go into a channel. But
I certainly don't mean to disrespect Chris Martin.
I think it's too late for that, mate.
but I think he's a really quality player. I mean, even when he wins things in the air, he's not just getting up and trying and flicking on anywhere. There's some intelligence around where he's trying to flick it to. There was once when ball came up to him and he's kind of gone up and he's sort of flicked it behind him, like to somebody's feet, and it was like, oh bloody hell, how did he manage? How did he even know he was there? It was like a no look header. It was a very fantastic finish. And I'm not sure he's going to be, you know, I think I'd be concerned if we're going to rely on him all season. But I think he's absolutely there to be a danger man, and that's what he is.
It does seem to be first choice over Marquis at the minute in terms of that centre forward position.
Yeah. Yeah, and I did think, actually, I thought when Marquis came on, I would probably say that the conditions didn't help, but he looked a bit like Bambi on ice. But to be fair, there were a few players that were, you know, losing their feet a little bit. But I think Marquis is going to have a part to play. I think both of them are kind of backup centre forwards at the moment. We need that proper all of that out and out centre forward in January, and I think that couldn't be more urgent, really.
Weeksy, Rovers made it 2-0 in the 30th minute. Evans, lovely little coolly taken penalty.
Yep.
I thought the ball from Finlay was absolutely class. You see, watch it back, gets in midfield, looks up and just pings that ball over the top to Collins, who's made the run through the defence. The thing I really wanted to talk about with this goal was Collins, which, as you mentioned earlier, and more the sort of more central role he had in the front two with Martin. Obviously, he's been out on the left quite a lot this season, had some good games there, to be fair. But I thought that goal showed the benefit of him playing centrally, because you think if you play Martin on his own through the middle, or Marquis through the middle, or Giovanni Brown through the middle, none of them really have that pace where they're going to run in behind a defence. And you saw the benefit of having Collins there, who's not lightning, but he has a bit of pace, and showed it there. And it just gives you the option of springing someone in behind.
Yeah, I noticed that about 15, 20 minutes in. He was making that run quite often, and there was a few times he nearly got in. And we made the comment on the terrace saying, you know, he's looking a threat in behind. I thought, we can get him in here.
Yeah.
And he has to... Well, sometimes that's to happen more than once, don't they, with Aaron? But, you know, he done really well, and, you know, saw the goalkeeper come in to touch around him, and, you know, and took the challenge, which every good striker should do. And, yeah, and the ball from Finlay, that's what's frustrating me with Finlay this season. Like, he is capable of that. And I don't know whether with the just two in there suited him a bit better.
Mm.
Gives him that little bit more room. But, yeah. Is it good? Good move and lovely penalty from Evans, just a slot away. I mean, I don't think I've ever worried about Evans over a penalty. Just all, you know, you know he's going to bury it. So, and whilst I'm on Evans, I think this season he's been superb for me. He's one of the first names on the team sheet at the minute. So, yeah, really good. Yeah, can't complain.
Yeah, I would say also, and I would throw this question to you boys, would you rather have Collins or JCH if you had to have one? I mean, I would have Collins over JCH.
I think because of the age factor, you've got to
say.
Yeah,
true.
With Collins,
yeah,
there's much more potential to either sell him on or for him to develop.
I think in terms of like...
How about both of them, though? That was obviously what we wanted.
Can we have both? I mean, that was the answer I was hoping for.
Yeah.
You've let me down there.
Yeah.
But no, I just think for someone who's... I can't remember the last player who was so comfortable with both feet as well. Just the ability to just... You know, it must be an absolute nightmare to play against a player like that. You just don't know if he's going to go around the outside of you, cut inside. He's quick. You know, he's just so technically brilliant, I think, Collins, that he's been one of the best signings we've had for many a year, I think. And even when he's not really at it, there's always that threat. And with JCH, we always know there's a goal in him, and he's fantastic. And it's not to disrespect him, but I just think Collins just offers an overall... better kind of player.
No, I agree. I think probably if we'd had JCH up front so far this season, might have had more goals from him than you've got from Collins, but there's no way JCH will have had five or six assists at this stage like Collins has got.
He's kind of similar to Martin in a way, JCH, in the sense that, you know, that they're both capable of scoring goals, you know, that target man. But, you know, as I say, Collins, I just think, just offers a little bit more, but that's just me.
Moving on to the second half. Obviously, Rovers went in 2-0 up at the break. Northampton then got one back from a set piece not long after the second half started, maybe about 55 minutes or so. Second half stats here. So Rovers had one shot on target and 37% of the ball, which for a home game is very, very unusual for us in the last few years. The second half, although I agree with Weeksy that I think we did have him at arm's length, it was just a little bit uncomfortable how much I thought we kind of got dominated by them, really.
I mean, I think when you... Again, I'll keep mentioning the conditions, but whenever, like... I mean, Northampton were just slinging the ball in every opportunity, and I think a lot of credit has to go to, like, the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper's fantastic. Connor Taylor, all the defence, they just looked like no one's getting passes today, even though there were a few scary moments. And I just think... When you're putting the ball in the box like they were, and it got a few players there who can put in some really decent deliveries, like their goal was a decent goal, to be fair, good cross header, you know, no complaints for that. But you just felt that, you know, if they were going to get one, it was largely going to be down to, you know, an effort on goal, you know, skids off the surface, goes in. You know, you just felt like it was going to be something that was going to be conditions related. I think if that was a dry day, I think we might have been even more comfortable. But so we were all a little bit nervous because we weren't quite sure which way it was going to go. But in the end, when you really look at it, they didn't really threaten us too much in the second half. It was just pressure, and they had the ball. It was, you know, you never knew what was going to happen. But, you know, we held out in the end of all fairly comfortably.
Yeah. All right, cool. Let's wrap up Northampton there then. We'll move on to part two, which, as I said, is going to be on Al Saeed's interview. So he obviously gave an interview before the Northampton game, confirmed that the Fruit Market stadium plans are dead, and obviously the club plans on staying at and redeveloping the Mem instead of moving to a new site. So yeah, the key points really, so roughly 18,000 capacity, and it's going to be redeveloped in three phases. So first one, the South Stand, which is obviously rumbling on at the minute, and then it'll be the East Stand, and then finishing with the Thatchers. So Weeksy, I'll come to you first on this one. I guess, first of all, just kind of overall thoughts on the fact that it does now look like a redeveloped Mem will be the short to medium, at least, term future for the club.
I'm absolutely delighted.
I am.
And the reasons for that are that the Mems are home, and you think back, there's been some big moments at the Mem that we can all look back on fondly. And when the Fruit Market was announced, was it April time? Was it? I can't remember now. There's been numerous, you know, rumours and video releases and things like that, which you probably don't need to go into. But, you know, a part of me is like, oh, we're going to leave the Mem and all that, like the Lee Brown moment, the 7-0. I can remember Barry Hales had against Brentford, which some will remember. I was only a kid at that time, but I can just remember that happening.
Lambert against the shit.
Another one is Jamie Curtin against Crewe. If anyone's ever seen that goal, it was just, I can remember being stood behind it where I still stand now. Yeah, I can remember it. And I'm delighted we're staying. And we're in our kind of our homeland, if you like. I know it's not Eastfield, as some will say, but you know, you've got Gloucester Road if you want to go out on the lash afterwards. I mean, there's big moments. You've got pubs like we're in now that around the ground, which I know the club may not want us drinking and in and things, and the club want the revenue, but it is good for fans to have that option. And I just think the Mem site, we can build something really quite quirky if they get it right. And crucially, they do need to get it right. So we'll be interested in seeing plans. You know, I think the South Stand still will be temporary. So bear with me with this one. I think they will build the rest, the East and the Thatchers. And then they may revisit that and just maybe try and take the pillars out and kind of try and anchor the stand without having pillars in the way, just to make it look a little bit more professional. But I think it'd be really good. I don't know what the plans are with the West Stand. I know there's not much room there.
It doesn't really sound
there.
Like they're touching the West Stand.
No.
From his interview, he mentioned all stands other than that side, which from what I took to mean that's kind of going to stay at least for the next 10 years or so.
I think they could probably like kind of give that a bit of a mini refurb. And if they incorporate it properly into the rest of the build, I see no reason why we can't have something quality there. I think we've got the space to put all the corporate facilities behind the East Terrace. You don't need such a big car park. The players can get bussed in from the training ground. As long as you've got some parking facilities, you know, for the less able to, you know, to walk any distance. I'm really, really pleased. And I think the vast majority around us seemed pleased when we heard the interview. I'm really interested to see some plans and see what they do plan to do, especially with the East Stand, because it looks like they're going to kind of build around it. But that can be done. That can be done if you look at it, but depends how it's done.
What about you, Will? Is there any disappointment? Because I think it's nice that we've got some kind of clarity on it now, at least. You know, I think every Gasshead is just sick to the back teeth of having a stadium plan 3 years later down the line, that gets scrapped. A couple of years later, a new stadium plan comes out, and we've just been in this constant loop. And all the meanwhile, we're at the Mem where nothing is happening. So at least now we know what the future is, and this is what we're going to do. But is there any disappointment for you that we're not going to be getting that kind of new, shiny, purpose-built stadium elsewhere? And for me, I kind of feel like it puts a little bit of a glass ceiling on our sort of future and how far we can go, compared to going elsewhere where there might be more kind of external revenue streams. Because I think that was the whole idea, right, of going to a new stadium, is that at the Mem, there's not a lot of non-match day revenue, whereas UE and Fruit Market, you might have got that. So, yeah, anyway, what are your thoughts on it all?
No, I mean, I first of all, I, I am very pleased that, I mean, I'm pleased that we've got some clarity on what the what the vision is. I think that was the first thing. It was we joked, we obviously did the pod last week, and we had to cut out a fair bit of it because we were probably a little bit harsh on the owners for not telling us anything. Of course, a day later
we spent a good 20 minutes slagging off the owners for not doing an interview, and the next day they did an interview.
It was like they were on the call. It was like, hang on, all right, you know, they felt our wrath and they delivered. But I mean, so my first, just on the interview that they gave, I mean, but that would be my only feedback on it. It would be great to hear what the plans were for the, you know, for the stadium. Great to get some clarity on the fruit market. But, you know, we could have been told this a while ago. And I am concerned that, like, unless BBC are asking for interviews on these specific questions, we might not get much more information. If they're going to listen, if they listen to this, I'd like them to just take that on board and be like, you know, you need a sort of far greater transparency, I think, for the fans, because I think it's what we want to hear. I always remember when Nick Higgs used to release those, what was kind of pointless updates. He used to release those updates on the stadium, like, oh, can't tell you anything, it's a watertight contract, blah, blah, blah. But even though it was nothing, it was something. It was like, okay, and it was a bit of a joke at the time. But then we haven't had anything since, like, Wales said it on the, I think it was Blackpool opening day of the season a few years ago. Everyone was talking about this fruit market idea, and we didn't hear anything until they released that video, that tweet the other few months ago. So I think I just want.
What do we want? Pointless updates. When do we want them?
Yeah,
now.
Yes, I want. I just want something. I want something.
You just want something to take the piss out.
Yeah,
of.
Yeah, exactly. Something for us to shoot. You know, pick the fat out of. But I want us to. So I'd like that a bit more often from them. That'd be great. But as far as, like, the stadium, I agree with you, Weeksy. Like, I'm quite happy to be staying where we are. Like, for most of us, you know, the Mem is what we know. It is our home. It's our generation, and we've had some fantastic moments there. I do also agree with you, though, Ollie, that it does feel a bit like, you know, how good could we possibly make it? And, you know, if we build a 16,000 seat stadium, is that it then for the next 30 years? You know, what is?
I think that's what I want to know. Is this going to get built and then that's it? Like,
yeah,
this is all. We're at, like, is there any room for it to then be expanded if we needed it to? I guess until the plans come out, we just don't know this sort of stuff, so we're kind of speculating. But
yeah,
I would like to know that. You know, to know how happy I can feel about it. I suppose,
of course. But yeah, all in all, like, just. Pleased, again, just to reiterate the point that, yeah, we're really pleased that we've heard some news on it. We got a bit of a roadmap. Just more updates from this point on, that'd be great.
Yeah. We've had a question from Elliot Lane, Weeksy, which says, do you think Al Sayed's vision of an 18K capacity Mem is about right? And do you have much confidence in it materialising? So in terms of the capacity, thinking 18K, as far as I can remember, back when, fuck knows what year this was now, back when we were looking at going to Cheltenham and redeveloping the Mem, I think that was about 18K or so.
Yeah, it might have been a tad more, I think. But I think 18K is bang on. I don't think, you know...
It feels big enough that we can grow, but not too big that we'll be rattling around in there, I think.
And that's the key point. You do not want to be rattling around in it. You do actually want it to sell out sometimes, and you want people kind of scrapping around for tickets a little bit, and it makes it a little bit more desirable, I think. I mean, I've always looked, when thinking about new stadiums, whether it was a new site, whether it was the Mem, I think, I don't know if anybody's been to Brentford Stadium, that's about 18,000, and they're in the Premier League. And they've managed to fit that in a tiny little space off the M4 there. And I just think about 18,000 is perfect. And, like, but you make a great point about whether, you know, we can all dream, and you never ever know if Brighton and Brentford can do it, you know, getting into the Prem. Then, you know, if you could chuck another tier on the East Terrace or something and put another 5,000 on, would be great. But I would actually be a bit concerned if we went bigger than 18,000, because if you start getting 11,000, 12,000 now, it's half empty, can feel a bit soulless and that. I know I've got family that are City fans, and some that are, you know, they are pretty honest, and they say when it's like a run of the mill home game and there's 18,000, 19,000, 20,000 in there, they say it's not great and it feels a little bit soulless. So yeah, I think 18,000's about right and reasonably comfortable with that, but you won't want to put that glass ceiling too low, and could you go a bit bigger?
I think I definitely agree with you in terms of, I think from what we're being told about how they're going to redevelop it, I think it could end up being something really unique and feeling very sort of very Rovers. Like, I almost feel like, and it was always my fear in a way, I remember even back to when UE was announced and looking at the drawings for that and feeling like, yeah, all right, it would be great in a way, but also I don't feel like I'd be watching Rovers in a stadium like that. No. Like, it's plastic, looks like every other new stadium that's been, other than someone like Brentford, which I think they've done it really well, because the stands, I've not been there, but I've seen on TV, the stands are all kind of different shapes and sizes, and that's kind of what the Mem has always been and will still be like, from what I understand.
You almost want it to almost keep the character it's got, if possible, and I'm sure the architects will be looking at that, because I think Rovers have... You know, when Wilde's been in and Tom Gorringe has been in, they have always taken our past into consideration, which I've always liked. You know, I know a lot of Rovers, we haven't been to Reading for years, and a lot we'll find out on Tuesday, that is a soulless bowl of a place.
That's which, the sort of stadium I didn't want to end up
in. Yeah, and Rovers. The UWE was going to be like that, wasn't it, to be fair? So, you know, we'll find out about that on Tuesday night. But, yeah, I'm hoping it's going to be something quirky and maybe a little bit odd. I'll be quite happy with that, to be honest.
I just feel like, I think in terms of, because obviously we do share the city with another side, and I feel like we kind of need to market ourselves in a different way for them. Like, they're the kind of, they've become the kind of corporate, shiny stadium. Whereas I think we need to be that club who, after we've expanded and redeveloped, it's like, yeah, but you can still go and stand at the Mem. We've still got safe standing, and it is all a bit different, and it all does look a bit out of place. But
I think
we're just that kind of club, aren't we? That's just what we are.
Fratton Park felt like that. They've redeveloped that away end, and it still felt, we loved that. It felt a bit old school.
Yeah.
Safe standing.
Old school's perfect.
That would be great. And Fratton Park's known for that as old school, proper football stadium. And before long, those are going to become very desirable, because everything else is going to be a soulless bowl. So yeah, I think we could do something along those lines. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to seeing the plans.
Yeah. Willett, we've had a couple of questions, quite similar. So Denner says, what do you all realistically want from the rebuild of the East and North Stand? And what do you think we'll end up with? And KP says, whilst the South Stand looks to be a massive improvement on the tents it's replacing, would you be happy with similar for the East and North Stands? I'm hoping for something a bit better. So obviously, yeah, like we've said, until we see the plans, until we see drawings, we don't know what we're going to end up in. Obviously, like Weeksy said, for all we know, South Stand could now be kind of a temporary thing until they look to revisit that later down the line. But obviously, it does sound like what they're going to do with the East is kind of bolt bits onto the side of what's already there. So I guess, what are your kind of thoughts on what you think we're going to get, and how do you kind of envision it in your head as to what you would like it to be?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I really have no idea at this point. I would say my fear is that, like, in the Thatcher's end is, I think, is one of the best ends in football. Absolutely. I've taken a couple of pictures, like, on a side view, where you just sort of see all the faces just, like, you know, looking towards the pitch. It just looks like a sea of people. Everybody stood up, everyone close together. I mean, it's so rare now that you get stands like that. And, it, you know, inevitably, that will have to change, because that's progress and what is. But I would really hope that we kind of really try and retain that sort of cop feel behind the goal, where everything's, like, really rowdy and raucous. I hope we don't lose that. I hope we don't turn it into, like, a singing section or something like that. You know, we need to retain that, you know, or any part of the stadium. Please, no singing section. If it's quiet, it's quiet. You know, I feel that, you know, anyway, that's just whatever. I was about to go on a rant then about bloody modernization of the football supporters. Just let us do what we want. But with the East stand, I have no idea.
Obviously the hope, everyone, I think what everyone hopes will happen is that they'll just knock what's there down and just build a brand new East stand. And from his interview, that doesn't sound like that's going to be the case. And in my head, that could either look brilliant if they do it right, or it could look seriously tin pot and a little bit shit. Yeah. And I'm just hoping it's obviously the former rather than the latter.
But like Weeksy said, I mean, we've always been a little bit quirky. It'd be like iconic if we built like something that looks like a tent but isn't a tent. It's actually like really permanent. But no, I mean, I have no idea, to be honest. I mean, we mentioned that we managed to stay dry on Saturday. If we could make sure that was a guarantee every weekend, that'd be quite nice. If we could fit a few more people in there, that'd be good. I guess we would make that all seated, and that'd be a good start, because we do have that terraced area is a bit strange. Like I stand also on the east terrace, where you're kind of like I'm right up against the wall, and like if it is raining, you've got like so many people squashed up against the barrier that's in front of it, and then like nothing in front of that, so it always looks strange on the TV. You've got a load of people crowded at the back and nothing at the front. So I mean, yeah, an all seated area there and that stand, I think, yeah, we'll be happy. But I am intrigued to see what this will look like.
What about you, Weeksy? What are you envisioning? What do you hope they're going
to
do?
Well, so far, sod all to everyone else, as long as Willich dry.
Yeah.
No, I think, I don't know whether we're kind of analysing his words maybe too much, because I would imagine that an architect will come in and say it's easier just to knock down what's already there, and you've got that. Because it's a raised concrete bit, isn't it? That they build something just on top of that and feed everything down.
Mm.
So I think it'd be something along the same sort of height as the east stand is now, but just from corner flag to corner flag. And then from the south stand, just bring it round like they've got in this southwest stand, I think it is, that little bolt-on bit to the what's there now. So, and that's where I think it'll be quite quirky.
See, again,
I don't know why I'm doing that. We're on a podcast and nobody can see what I'm doing.
We're not filming this on there. Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it will be different heights. And I think,
but again, that's shit, but I love it.
Yeah. Why not?
It looks shit, but it's why great. Not? I think Rovers.
Just in my head, I can't get Brentford Stadium around my head. Just do something like that, please. I think that'd be great. But
just thinking off the top of my head, the problem with knocking down that east stand completely is you've got a bar or two in there. Doesn't all the hospitality dining happen in there?
Yeah, you've got a big open space in there with a dining.
You've got the club shop.
Offices are in there as well.
Offices under there. So if you're knocking that down completely, you're losing a lot of facilities that you then need to find somewhere else. It's not the end of the world, I suppose, but it is quite a major bit of the stadium to lose, you know?
I'm quite confident, and I'm almost certain now that this will happen, just because they said that the south stand within the next month is going to be done, which I was kind of like, okay, that's quite a big update, really. And then, you know, we're going for that next, which is probably the biggest project of the stadium. That's going to be a big, expensive build. I would imagine that's where all the money, or weekday money-making conference facilities are going to be. So, yeah, I just think corner flag from corner flag, and the same sort of height and size it is. Because if we're going to get to 18,000, it's going to have to hold probably, what, 8,000-9,000 realistically on well, probably not that much on each side. But and we're seeing with the Thatcher's end, they've got
Can you see them doing?
They've got to get that right. That is probably the most crucial bit for me, because that's always our home end, our you know, kind of our cop end,
the
if
end
you
that
like.
Sucks the ball in when you need a goal. Yeah,
I can see possibly like a double tier there, I'd imagine. Just because I think you can utilize the space above where all the Thatcher's bar is and everything. That's the bit I'm probably most intrigued about and most concerned that they get that right. Like Willett said, no singing sections. We just want a old school end, and don't try too hard with it, I think is probably going to be the key. But it's exciting, yeah. And I just think it's going to be really good. And what I will say is, where the south stand is and the pitch right up against the Thatcher's, the stadium suddenly feels you're on top of the pitch.
It all feels very tight.
Yeah, and if we can keep that feeling, I think that would be good too.
Yeah. I think just to round this bit off. I saw a post on the forum earlier from Gas and Electricity. It says, I think the strategy is to tart up the ground with cost-effective improvements in the short to medium term so that we can continue in the championship without having to worry about deadline for stadium improvements being foisted upon us, while simultaneously progressing the club on the pitch to generate revenue streams, which mean further enhancements pay for themselves. I think that's a good point. Like, we're obviously looking to get up to the championship ASAP from what Al Saeed said. But if we went up with the mem as it is, we'd then, what would we have? Is it three years they give you to tart up the ground and get more seats in, I believe? I think we've got too much terrace in, basically, for what a championship.
The threshold of seats goes up, doesn't
it? Yeah. So I think that's a really good point. And basically, the further we go up, if we do then generate more revenue, if we got, I don't know, average attendances of 12, 13, 14,000, hopefully, then maybe later down the line, if we do want to then do the West Stand, maybe it kind of funds itself over a few years.
And who's to say that it doesn't put us in a stronger position to go after a new site in the meantime?
I mean,
these guys we discussed before, taking 55% of the club off of Al Qadi, who we know loves the club, you know, must be serious players. And I would imagine they want to come in and do something pretty major, but understand that something kind of needs to happen now, and I think the fan base needs something to kind of happen now. We're kind of losing all hope. So who's to say they may not in the background be going after another site for long term, and then maybe really, really get that right. And if we're establishing the Premiership, oh my God. In the Championship, get established in the Championship.
I'm not cutting out, but there's no chance.
But get established in the championship, then I think it puts us on a stronger foothold if we want to push on, and they can kind of, you know, review it then.
Final question on this. What's your gut feeling on what Weeksy just said as to whether you think this memory development is it now, or whether you think in the back of their head and on the side they will still be looking at other sites and thinking, or maybe not in the next 10 years, but maybe in 15 years after these redevelopments have maybe paid for themselves, we could still look to go to a new site?
My hope is that they are still, you know, scanning the city for spaces, I mean for areas that we could redevelop, you know, to build a stadium. We know we've been doing this for forever, you know, and there's always been the occasional site, oh, what about this area? It's never come to fruition. My hope is that they are and will continue to do that. It does feel like that would have to happen. Let's say we got really successful. And I think we should probably just focus on trying to finish above Oxford.
Weeksy guaranteed us that would happen on the last pod.
That was what I was thinking.
Pointed straight at the camera and said we would finish above Oxford.
We will, he says. He doesn't have the mic, but he just confirmed it. It's going to happen. But let's try and focus on that. And then the Premier League will come after. But I do feel, I think like, I mean, he said he was in for the long term. You know, they've got real ambition for the club. If that's the case, then I think they would have to have some, you know, not so much plan B, but, you know, phase two, phase three, the future, the roadmap. This is what I'm talking about. You know, it's what I want us to kind of see that as fans. I want to see, like, where actually do you see us in 10 years, you know? I'm excited by it, though. It's good. This is only, like, the seventh stadium redevelopment / new stadium plan I've seen in my lifetime, so, you know, why not?
I think the thing that excites me about it is, even though the South Stand obviously is only sort of half built or 65% built, whatever, at the minute, it already, just that one end being done, half done, already when you go there just makes it look like much more of a proper football stadium. And you just think, when three sides are like that, all right, it won't be the Medeski, which we don't want it to be anyway, but it'll look so much better than it does now.
And it is interesting because obviously we kind of mocked the club a little bit. Well, a lot of people did when the plans were announced. And we started selling season tickets in that stand. And it was like, hang on a minute, like, this is never going to get done in time. But I do wonder, like, because the new owners came in, and you wonder whether they kind of looked at it and thought, hang on, we can do a bit more here. Because if you look at the original plans, it looks bigger than those plans, that first, like, artist impression. You looked at it, you thought, oh, yeah, that looks pretty decent. This looks much bigger than that, I think. So you wonder whether new owners have come in and gone, hang on, we got a new spec here. We're going to maybe push the envelope a bit and make that, because I don't know, I reckon it, that could be a permanent structure, but I guess we'll see. But it looks more permanent now than it ever has. I mean, we made a tent last 30 years. This place is going to outlast the Colosseum, I imagine. But yeah, it's exciting, and it's great to see every Saturday. I sort of was like, oh, hang on, they've put a couple more pillars in there. I've already got a few more, like, you know, bollards in there. It's good.
Yeah,
good progress.
Good stuff. All right, cool. Let's move on to part three then, the search for Joey Barton's replacement as the new manager. So we've had a couple of questions here. We've had loads of questions here actually, but we're going to start with a couple. One from Mark Payne, which just said, who's your replacement of choice? The other one from George C, which says, what kind of manager would you like to see appointed? Experienced, attack-minded, or a focus on defence with our lack of clean sheets? So in order to answer those questions, we've got the old trusty whiteboards out again. And I showed you, before we started, the 10 names at the top of the bookies' odds at the minute for the job. So I'll run through them quickly. So this is being recorded Thursday evening. So this is as it was Thursday. So from favourite to least favourite, we've got Neil Harris, Gary Monk, Gareth Ainsworth, Andy Mangan, Ian Holloway, Steve Cottrell, Dean Holden, Carl Robinson, Danny Cowley, and Tommy Widrington, who... We've discounted Tommy Widrington from this little exercise because that's just not happening, let's be honest. So I asked you both to write down two of those names that you would want and two that you wouldn't want as the new manager. I've done the same thing, obviously. So we're just going to go around one by one, basically, and go through your choices for each column. So Weeksy, you can choose. Do you want to start with your wants or don't wants?
I'll start on my don't want, because I think there's one on there that's not so obvious.
All right, go on then.
So the obvious that should be on everybody's list is Steve Cottrell.
Yeah, he's on mine.
Yeah. Good. And for obvious reasons, just don't like the bloke.
I've seen a surprising number of people, mainly on the forum and a few on Twitter, saying that they wouldn't be against him getting it. I'd be so against it, I've got to be honest.
The next appointment we make needs to... bring all the fans together and not, I just cannot be bothered with people arguing with each other anymore. So yeah, Steve Cottrell for me would be absolutely the wrong man. It's just his interviews after games does it for me.
He the comes attitude across on the like man, such a bell end. I've got
yeah, and I just not for me. And he did very well for City, didn't he? So they love him down there as well. And I just don't want him anywhere near us, to be honest with you. I can just see it being a car crash in slow motion and wouldn't last very long, and then we'd be at square one. And the second one for me is Gareth Ainsworth. I don't want him anywhere near the football club.
He's also on my don't want list as well.
I know there's a couple of others, more obvious ones on the list there, but for me, but Gareth Ainsworth, just because of the style of football, and I know that was one of the questions on what type of style of football that you want. I'd want us to carry on with an attractive style of football, attacking.
Looking at Willett's face, I'm getting the feeling he's put Ainsworth in his want section. We'll on to him.
I mean, you know, he did very well at Wickham, and you can't take that away from him. I think he did very, very well with resources, got him in the Championship. But you can't argue with that, but every time he's had a side come back down to the Mem, I've just left the place furious after watching his goalkeepers just dive on the ball and stay on it for 5 minutes and feigning injuries and things. So that would be my don't want list.
Okay. Willett, do you want to run us through your don't wants first of all?
All right. Well, so first one on the list is Dean Holden.
Dean Holden, okay.
So,
and who we have talked to, apparently, according to the post.
Well, exactly. That clickbait article, which I refuse to click it. I just read the headline. Now, to be honest, it's got nothing to do with the City links, really. Well, it's got something to do with it, in that he was just terrible there. So, well, we didn't...
I don't think he was terrible.
I was just going to say, maybe he had a decent start, I think. Like a lot of management, you know, it ends up just unravelling. You know, difficult situation. He took over from Lee Johnson, and that was difficult because he did well, Lee Johnson. And although City fans don't want to hear it, he did brilliantly there, really, Lee Johnson. They all thought they could do better, and Dean Holden was the guy who couldn't quite live up to their expectations. A tough job to take. And then he did Charlton. You know, no one
does well at Charlton.
But at the same time, I think, and you know, I'll come on to my second don't want for a similar reason, that really right now, we've all said it, whether you're a pro Barton or anti Barton, we all want a manager that we can, that we all feel like we can get behind. I think if you install a manager with a pretty poor previous record, add the fact that they used to be a red as well, I think you're dicing with death here.
He's not a unity appointment.
No, exactly. And I think, you know, I don't really have any strong feeling either way, you know, about any of the managers out there. So I it does matter if they're a good football manager. I don't want them to be a total wrong'un. I just want someone, and time will tell whether anybody is going to be a success. Whether they were successful in their previous jobs doesn't mean they're going to be successful here. We've had a ton of them that have promised great things and haven't delivered, and equally we've had people that we're maybe not sure about and become really decent. So you just never know at this point. So I just want somebody who I feel like I can just throw all my support behind, and I'll go from there. But I'll move on to my second one, is Steve Cottrell.
Okay.
Full
house for Steve.
Yeah,
Cottrell.
Yeah, full house. Well, Steve. And I will say one thing for Steve Cottrell. I remember when he was manager at Cheltenham, he was like one of the most like sought after managers in the country, because he took him from the Conference to League One potentially. Did really, really well. I think he got the Stoke job and it didn't quite work out. But I always remember they beat us at home 2-0, I think. And they played us off the park. And the interviewer was kind of like, I think the Cheltenham sort of media guy was like, sort of like, aimed a few jabs
at
the
club. Yeah.
And he sort of said, well, hang on. He said, like, if Cheltenham ever achieve this sort of reputation that Bristol Rovers have in the Football League, then we know we've done well. And I always remember that interview and thinking, like, would love him as manager. But then he became a bloody shithead, didn't he? So,
so that
was it. Fuck off, Steve. And that's it. So unlucky, he makes a list.
I also think, to be fair, out of those 10 names I read at the start, over his career, he's probably got one of the best, most successful careers in League One, League Two. Didn't he take City up as champions?
He did, yeah.
They scored a lot of goals that season, played really nice football. Because I know at Shrewsbury, he's kind of built a reputation for himself as being a bit of a long ball merchant. But at City, they did play really good stuff. So I think he can coach that type of football.
Yeah, it sounds like he can adapt his style a bit. Yeah. But, you know.
But he's not the unity man,
yeah, exactly,
is he?
Yeah,
I mean, he is, because everyone fucking hate him. He'd get booed onto the pitch at the start of his first game.
Bottom back, come on.
All right, cool. Yeah, as I said, my choices are exactly the same. Cottrell and Ainsworth. We've done Cottrell. Ainsworth, I agree with you. Weeksy, I just think, style of football doesn't match the squad that we've got, and how I think... You know, I just think Ainsworth would waste Collins, Thomas, Brown.
There was a classic Barton moment. I think we got beat by Wickham, and he said something like, well, that's why Wickham pay him like 10 grand a year or something like that. Not 10 grand a week. Because he can get teams playing, you know, ugly football that wins you matches. And I thought, like, he probably would come here on a massive, massive salary, I would say, if he was like, I can guarantee you promotion kind of thing. And I don't know whether that would change your mind Nobody could ever guarantee it, of course, but he did have a bit of a model at Wickham that he built over a fairly long period of time.
He did a phenomenally good job at Wickham. He did, I hated the style of play. Yeah, I hated playing them, but he did, for the size of that club, the job he did there was absolutely unbelievable, to be fair.
Yeah, he did.
I still don't want him.
No, but agree. Yeah,
I can see why some people are looking at him and thinking, why not?
Yep.
You know, he's become available at just the right time, potentially. But yeah, not for me. All right, cool. Let's go on to the do wants. We'll come back round to you, Weeksy. Do you want to talk us through your two choices?
Yeah, and I've changed my mind from this morning just because of Max's incredible stats that he sent us earlier on WhatsApp.
I do have that spreadsheet in front of me. It's delicious, to be fair.
It was really good reading, actually, and changed my mind. So on my want list, and I can't believe I'm saying this, is Carl Robinson.
Okay.
Just because I think he'll make us finish above Oxford, his old club, and prove me right.
Save your reputation.
Yeah. No. All seriousness, I think his teams, when we've come up against his side, MK Dons, Oxford, I think they've always played attractive football. Just looking at his stats here, his points per game in League One, we're looking at, 1.5 points, almost 2 points per game, which is what we're looking at, what we would want. You need 2 points per game for a kind of promotion charge. But I just always liked his Oxford sides. I know he struggled in the last stint or the last period of his management career at Oxford. But before that, they were strong. They were always, you know, around the top six in League One. And I just think his style of football would suit the squad that we have. And I don't think we would require so much upheaval. And like you said, he wouldn't waste the likes of Giovanni Brown, Aaron Collins, you know, and the flair players that we got. So
I think he would be licking his lips at the squad we've got and the type of football he wants to play.
Yeah, and I can kind of visualise him at our club, and it kind of looks right, which I wasn't thinking of earlier on in the week.
Is that because he's Scouse?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, all the backroom staff are hoping he comes in, aren't they? Let's be fair. But no, I just think I think he would get us, and I might be completely wrong.
I know what you mean. In my head, he just fits, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I can just imagine him being in that home dugout.
I must admit, I didn't think that until this morning. And it wasn't until I saw the stats, and I thought, you can't really argue with that. And so that's one of my wants. And the other one is Gary Monk. I know he hasn't been in a job for 3 years. He's managed some big, big football clubs, the likes of, you know, Leeds, Birmingham, Middlesbrough. You know, done a good job at Swansea. And there's another one I can kind of visualise him being our manager. And I think he's mainly on there because I think everybody would be reasonably happy with that. I don't think anyone would be offended by it, put it that way.
He's the name that I've probably seen most from Rovers fans on social media and online as to who they would want. Seems to be Gary Monk, seems to be the most popular choice, I would say.
Yeah, and I think he's been dealt tough cards as well with the clubs that he's been at. I think Birmingham in a mess. Leeds certainly are in a mess when he was there. So
he was Birmingham's fifth permanent manager in 15 months when he went in there. I mean, that says everything.
It's a shit show,
absolute
isn't it?
Basket case.
You're doing well to get any sort of points per game out of that. So, yeah it's just two there that I think are unoffensive and I think I could get behind, which I think is, we joke, but I really think that is something we need at the minute. But I honestly think Carl Robinson would be my
So is he your number one?
I think he's my number one, and I can't believe I'm saying it. But I can see it, and I'm thinking about it now. And
Max's spreadsheet has done the right number on
you.
He's done
me, Max. He's absolutely the powers of persuasion. I just need a spreadsheet, guys.
You just saw all those green boxes on Carl Robinson's section, and it's just one you write over, isn't it?
It's done me. So the psychology Max has put on me is brilliant there. So for me, those two I wouldn't fall out with at all. And you know, we were saying the list is a little uninspiring. But I think those two I could definitely, I wouldn't be massively excited over, but I think they'll do a good job.
Will it? Do you want to talk us through your wants?
Yeah, sure. I should start by saying that, I mean, Max did a fantastic job on that spreadsheet. Shout out to Max. It was decent. It did turn my head a little bit. I did spend most of the day basically saying stats don't matter. Stats don't matter, Max.
You're a vibes man.
I'm a vibes man.
As you're saying, pre-record, you're a pure vibes man.
I was like, get all the way in. What are we doing here? What are we even discussing this? Just get all the way in. But no, I've gone with Neil Harris. And I've just been looking at my board going, why did I put Neil Harris? I just remember Neil Harris for being a fantastic player. He always scored against it. I loved him as a player. And I think from looking at the stats, I got a feeling he did quite well. He has done fairly well wherever he's been.
Well, but he ticks. He's one of few managers actually on this list that ticks both criteria that Al Sayed set out in his interview of wanting a young manager who's got experience of taking a club from League One to the Championship.
Yeah,
because he's a young manager and he took Millwall up through the playoffs.
Yeah.
He fits both of those boxes. So it makes sense. I mean, he is 2-1 as we sit here today.
Yeah, he is.
Favourite to get the job. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't know if there's anything in that, but you can see why, because he does fit what they want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why I stuck him down, for those reasons. But I'm quite open-minded. And I got that the second one is also Carl Robinson, thanks to Max's stats, really. Thinking, hang on, this guy, why is no one else picking this guy up? He's fantastic. But he's also Scouse, so he'll fit right in the Scouse house. So I've never really liked Carl Robinson. I've always thought, there's always been something about him. Never quite liked. Maybe it's the MK Dons link. I don't know. I used to really, really, really hate MK Dons. Now they've just sort of blended into society like everyone else. But I think he would do a good job with us. I think he's experienced. He's still a fairly young coach, so he'll still be like quite ambitious, you'd think. And he could probably do a good job here. So I've stuck him down as well. But there's a few notable men. I mean, Gary Monk's also a good shout, I think. But nobody really inspires, I gotta be honest. I mean, Holloway is a funny one because that's also sort of got everybody talking about it. You've got people that absolutely love the bloke, people who don't really like the bloke. But I guarantee you, if he did come in, I think we would sell out every week. I think we'd sell out every week. But I think we talked before the pod, didn't we? Someone like Holloway, he's the sort of bloke you might bring in like 15 games to go if you need to like try and get yourself over the line. And you mentioned, Ollie, that maybe he was the sort of guy we should have brought in instead of Barton at the time in League One. He might have been the guy to get something out of that squad. But anyway, I don't think Holloway's going to happen.
I listened back to our Seeds interview today, and I think another probable reason for Carl Robinson, we joked about the Scouse thing, but if Al Saeed said in the interview that they want to build a backroom staff that is the club's backroom staff.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Which was really interesting. And when I thought about it, I thought, oh, I'm not sure if I'm overly keen with that, because it makes it very easy to sack a manager. And I thought, oh, don't be one of those owners that, as soon as it starts going wrong, sack a manager. But we laugh about the Scouse thing, but Carl Robinson, I could see him with Andy Mangan. And I think we could all agree, like, most people love Andy Mangan. Glenn Whelan's a great bloke to have around, and even Ancy Yokola got the fans and everything. So, I could see Carl Robinson in it, but that backroom staff thing really caught my attention. I think that's something really, really different and really quite clever. It gives us that stability. As long as whatever manager comes in, they don't get into the habit of sacking them, because it's all right, we've got our backroom staff that are going to get us out of a hole. Yeah, interesting one to think about.
Also, I don't know if we were about to touch on it, but obviously we've just brought Bond back, haven't we?
Bond?
Yeah, Tight Bond, he's back. And I just wonder whether that might be a way of kind of giving Mangum a genuine opportunity, a genuine crack at it. Bringing Bond in for like one game would be weird. So it might be a case of, they're going to give him a few games, and actually maybe they're not all that impressed with the candidates they've got in front of them, and they think we might want to just take a look at it.
I'm going to come on to Mangan in a minute.
Yep.
First of all, I just want to touch on Neil Harris. We had a question from a guy whose name I forgot to write down. I think it's something like Crisco Jack, so apologies if I got that wrong. But he asked, basically, how much do we care about style of play and entertainment, or are we purely looking at a results man? Because if we're purely looking at results man, you probably go back to someone like Gareth Ainsworth, who we've all kind of said we don't want. But again, Neil Harris, it sounds like, kind of fits into that thing where he might come in and be successful, but it's not going to be great to watch. Maybe we're going back to kind of Coughlin football. So I guess just like, what are your thoughts on that, really?
Yeah, I mean, that is always a risk, isn't it? If you play that sort of style, no one really complains when you're winning. It's just the second you start going on a bad run. I mean, we think back to Coughlin. It took a long time to get the fans on board. Eventually we did. That one game, the Ipswich away game, was like
where
pretty much everyone was like, "All right, I think I can come around to this." And by like before the sun had set, he'd gone. And I just think, but there's always that risk, isn't there, of that, like, are we willing to sacrifice, decent football? But I always, my feeling has always been, winning football is the only brand of football I want to watch, really. And I think
under Coughlin, it was like he got us up to a good position in the league. It was generally winning football, but the attendances at the Mem were not good. I remember them being around sort of 6,500 as we were climbing the league under him and winning most weeks.
I think one thing with that was, obviously, that was post Darryl Clarke, and I think there was a kind of like, there was a bit of a hangover of that, like, the glory days are over. We got a new guy in. We're not quite sure about the way he plays. I mean, he obviously firefought us to safety that first season, and then he was given a fairly long contract, 2.5 years, I think. And it was like, oh, really?
It wasn't a very sexy appointment at the time,
wasn't.
Was it?
And I think it just sucked the life out of people a bit. But I think that would have turned around had he stayed, and we kept being successful, and we kept staying near the top of the league. I think the fans would have come back. But I I mean, of course, we'd love to see a manager that plays like slick football, and you know, to be honest, not too dissimilar to what we had under Barton. Frankly, I thought it wasn't bad to watch at times. If we could have something like that, that'd be fantastic. Just a decent fella.
I think the sweet spot is something in the middle. I think I'm looking for something style of play wise. I'm looking for someone who can get us playing between Barton, possession heavy, pass out from the back, and Coughlin, which was more direct, get it forward. I think the sweet spot is somewhere in between that, really, because I think you do need probably to be a bit more willing to go direct and hit the front man in League One and the lower leagues. But I don't want to really ideally go back to full Coughlin ball, personally.
I just think you just need that plan B, don't you? So you could play the attractive football, but have the ability for when it's not working or it starts to go wrong. And
or on a day like against Northampton where it's bucketing it down.
Dig in and just win ugly type thing. Have a team and manager that's willing to do that, which would have been a criticism of Barton's side, that they were just trying to play the same way all the time. And sometimes you say, look, it's not working. But it's just so stubborn. Especially in League One, because I think you're in that sweet spot in the leagues as well, aren't you, where there's some really, really good footballing sides. Really good football players in that league that have been there and done it, but you've also got the cloggers, the header in kickets. So, like you said, I think that sweet spot of I would want to see us play attractive football because, like you said, the attendances will remain high. Because throughout the Barton era, I think the attendances were good throughout, weren't they? Even,
yeah,
you know, when we weren't doing quite so well. So, that plan B for me would be crucial. A manager willing to kind of go against any sort of philosophy that he sets.
I'll just quickly run through my top two, and they are exactly the same as yours, Week. So yeah, so I've got
same four. We got
Gary Monk. We have got the same four, actually. Yeah, Gary Monk and Carl Robinson for me. Gary Monk, he finished eighth in the Prem with Swansea. It was a little while ago now, but led them to wins over, you know, Man United, Arsenal, went to Leeds. I think from what I remember and from reading up on it, he was actually doing a really good job at Leeds in the Championship as well. They just missed out on the playoffs by one place, I think. And then he had a falling out with the owner. I can't remember who the owner was at the time, but he was literally falling out with everyone. And I think Monk then resigned. As we said, Birmingham was a basket case. Borough, I'm pretty sure he only spent about 4 months there. It was a really short time, not enough time to get his feet under the table. And then Sheffield Wednesday didn't go well. That was his last job, right? Sort of 3 years ago or so. Yeah. But again, I think it was another kind of basket case club, as they are at the moment, by the way. They're just one of those clubs, aren't they?
A mess.
But I feel like, so there's a question here from Andy Corp. It says, always thought the one good thing about the Barton appointment is that with his troubles, he needed it to work as much as we did. So question is, of the front runners, who needs it to be a success the most? And that's one of the reasons I really like Gary Monk, because I look at all the names there and think who, if they came in, would need it to work as much for them as they would for us. And I think Gary Monk is that guy. I haven't been out of work for 3 years. I imagine he has been applying for jobs in the last 3 years and obviously not getting them or turning down certain opportunities maybe. But if he came to us and wasn't a success and we sacked him, I couldn't then, where does he go basically? I think his managerial career is kind of over at that point. So I think he would come in and be so hungry to make it work because he would obviously want to see himself getting back up to the Premier League and Championship, I imagine. So that's the reason I like Gary Monk, basically. And Robinson, again, the spreadsheet's just done me, to be honest. Max's spreadsheet.
So we might have to share that if Max gives us the copyright.
Yeah. It's, you cannot argue with that record. At MK Dons, at Oxford, his team scored loads of goals. That was the main thing that stood out in the spreadsheet. They scored a lot of goals compared to the amount they conceded. His teams have always played really good, attractive football. The sort of football that, as we said, we want to see and probably suits the squad. I just think he ticks a lot of boxes. Again, he's had a promotion from League One to the Championship like they want. I think his kind of reputation is tarnished amongst Gasheads by having seen how badly it went for him at Oxford in the last few months. But he had five seasons there and four of them were really good. Two of them he finished in the playoffs. When was the last time we finished in the playoffs in the third tier?
Probably under Holloway, wasn't it?
Yeah, it would have been that.
Yeah. And Robinson's finished in the last 5 years in the playoffs twice in this division and finished one spot outside the playoffs of Oxford as well. So this guy is consistently finishing in the sort of area that we want to be in, playing great football. Yeah, it went a bit tits up at the end, but he was there for 5 years. Like that, the average life expectancy and shelf life as a manager is a lot less than that.
If you go into any of the managers that we've written down, then normally their last job, the last seasons, tend to have gone wrong.
Yeah.
That's why they're not in the job anymore.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So, and you know, every manager has his lifespan and maybe just couldn't take Oxford that extra step where you'd like to think that he's got resources to do that with us.
Yeah.
Maybe not ground-wise and things like that, but certainly training grounds coming on and hopefully some of the financial backing we've got, we may be able to take that extra step and finish above Oxford.
Will, I'll come back to you on Mangs. We've had a question from Tristan Reeks, which says, is Andy Mangan not a really good option? Knows the players, plays the same way, but thinks before he speaks. Having seen Northampton, I'm not sure the plays the same way bit is entirely true. If that's to be a blueprint as to how he's going to play going forwards if he gets the job, I don't think we are going to play in exactly the same way, but I know what he's saying. He's not going to lump it back to front. So, yeah, I mean, I've seen there seems to be a bit of a growing feeling that I've seen online that actually none of the names are massively appealing. So do we just give it Mangs?
I think there is a real shout for Mangs, really, because I just feel that they may decide that what's the worst that can happen. He might be able to kind of keep us going. It happened under Coughlin where we suddenly got a bit of momentum. We won a few games and he got the job off the back of that. And I wouldn't put it past him to do something similar here. You know, we've obviously got Whitby in the cup. Lose to Whitby, I think it is game over. So he has to. It's the biggest game of his life. It really is. It doesn't get better. I also think for him personally, I think he also needs to, you know, if he really wants to be a manager, kind of needs to forge his own way here. I mean,
Needs to find his own wings.
Yeah, like, I think at the moment, you know, I've been describing him to people, you know, outside of the know that, like, I've been describing Andy Mangan as Joey Barton's mate. You know, oh yeah, we basically got Joey Barton's mate in charge. But actually, that's doing him a real disservice. Like, he's done well in the games that he's actually had to take charge. We actually played probably our best football at the start of the season when he took those games on. He does come across well in the media, and I think I kind of feel a bit sorry for him at the moment, because he must be thinking, God, and all of the staff must be thinking, any day now we're probably going to be out of a job. So I am kind of rooting for him a bit. And
whenever I hear him speak, I find him very easy to warm to as well. Yeah, he's just likable. He just comes across really well, I think.
Yeah, and I didn't think there was really anything wrong with how we played on you know, against Northampton. I mean, like I say, it was safety first, and that was smart football, because he knows if I slip up on the first day, like, it is game over.
It's
already
done, isn't it? Yeah.
So and I could sense that from the squad that you know that they're playing for him, that they really want to. I think the players would love him to get it. I think, I don't really know, but I think they would. So yeah, I'm open to it, and you know, if we can get past Whitby, and then if he can stick around, maybe, you know, pinch a win at Reading away, I'd say his odds would tumble. I think he could be, you know, it's a big couple of weeks for Mangum, I think.
Is there any, I do have a little bit of concern, I've got to be honest. I know it's rumour and media reports and stuff at the minute, but the names that Bristol Post say that we're interested in have been linked to, pretty much none of them have actually fitted the criteria that the owners laid out. So like Holloway, Holden, Monk, they're the main three that have been named. None of them are either young or have experience of League One to Championship promotions. Is there any concern for you that it feels a little bit scattergun to me? Obviously, we don't know who else they're talking to. I'm sure we're not hearing every name, but I do feel like we're kind of interviewing any manager within 50 miles of the Mem with a pulse. Get them in and we'll interview them. It doesn't seem to be a very clear direction.
I mean, it's always difficult, isn't it, to go on to the betting odds? Because I think when we employed Joey Barton, I think it surprised everyone. He kind of come from nowhere. So there may be someone that does come from nowhere.
Like the German bloke?
Yeah, which it was a forum rumour, wasn't it, I think. So it's, yeah. I said on Radio Bristol after the game on Saturday, went up into the stand and spoke to Rich up there, and I said that I think people should be coming to us. I genuinely think that people should be coming to us. It's a great city to live in. you know, the ground improvements, a decent budget for this level, I think any manager worth his salt would achieve something here. And I would like to think that people are knocking our door down rather than us going looking for people.
Even people in jobs at other clubs, you think?
I think so. Yeah. And I do genuinely think that. And I would quite like them to take... I think we've got time, at least 2 or 3 weeks before a manager can come in and have 5 or 6 games before the January transfer window opens. And all of our fixture list looking reasonably kind, I don't think there's any rush. And Willie made a great point there. I think the players will play for Andy Mangan, even if it is just for, say, 3-4 weeks. And as I said, on Saturday is a really important one to get right, especially if we're going to invest, you know, in a reasonably long contract for one of them. Yeah, I just don't want to get them wrong. And obviously, we don't know their decision-making process yet, and we don't know, so it's hard to trust them. Not saying that I don't, because I did like the way that he spoke. Obviously, he'd spoke on the radio. I thought it was quite good. But we have nothing to pull back on, do we, and have a look at it. Do we trust them? Are they going to make good managerial appointments? We don't know. This is our first experience of it. So take your time with it, guys. And I don't think we're in any major rush. I don't think we're in any danger of going down. And it's not like we're in a playoff spot and could throw it all away. So I can't see the point in rushing it.
Yeah. Question from Zulu Gas to finish us off for the pod. He says, what would be considered successful from the new manager at the end of this season? Top half finish, playoffs, or just keep the ship steady and go again next season? Maybe it depends on who they bring in for that question. But yeah, what would you say would be the aim?
I think if we were going to say what is successful, I would say I'd be disappointed if we didn't finish in the top half as a minimum, really. But I would definitely give them some leeway if we just ended up bobbing around just below halfway. I would accept that as, you know, somebody coming in with a bunch of players that's not theirs.
And, yeah,
you know, it would give us also a proper opportunity to see this squad over a course of a whole season, and we can work out then just how good some of these players are, rather than just being good in a couple of games here and there. I think to see them over a course of a whole season under different coaches, we'll get a decent idea. But I think I'd be hoping for top, well, I'd be hoping for top half looking at the playoffs, obviously. But that would be acceptable, and I think successful as well. If we can get into top half, that'd be fine.
What about you, Weeksy? What would you say? Because I know that Al Sayed said in that interview, didn't he, that one of the reasons that he gave for getting rid of Barton was that he says we've got basically a top eight budget and we're not anywhere near the top eight at the minute. So do you think that the owners are going to want someone to come in and get us in the top eight?
Yeah. I can't see why not. If it was me, I'd be saying playoffs, minimum. Playoffs.
Would you?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the we're a striker short of automatics, in my opinion.
Your target genuinely would be come in and finish above Oxford.
Yeah, and Oxford are seventh. No, I think, honestly, we were a striker away from having a good tilt at the league itself. I think the league's poor this year. I've not seen a side that have been any good, to be honest with you, and just waiting for us to click, because we know what the players we've got. We've got, you know, last year's League One Player of the Year. You had Giovanni Brown before his suspension that was on course to have the same, if not better, numbers than Aaron Collins. We were seconds away from getting probably the best striker in the league. We've got the best centre-half in the league in Connor Taylor for me. So I think minimum playoffs, and Al Sayed said, innit, it's still early in the season, that's still achievable. And we've had enough of being Bristol Rovers and just accepting mediocrity. I just think now we've got these owners in, things are finally happening at stadium, let's just start pushing and let's start expecting more and demanding a little bit more. And I think playoffs minimum, or we riot.
Oh, we riot. Okay. I did enjoy this one from John McSherry, who says, is it time for the tactical genius who stands behind me in the West Stand and shouts, get it forward all game, to finally be given his chance? Give him a 3-year deal.
Yeah, it got to happen.
We're not going to talk about it, but Whitby, I think when we release this, Whitby's probably already happened, so this is utterly pointless, but score prediction for Whitby?
Well, I'll go 3-0 Rovers.
6-0 Rovers.
I was going to say, Weeksy wants at least 5. I could see it in his eyes.
6-0 Rovers.
If it's less than 5, Weeksy's walking out. Cool, right. Let's wrap it up there then. So, as always, thank you very much for listening and for all your questions. And we will be back, as usual, in a couple of weeks' time, or before, if a new manager comes in and the emergency pod klaxon is sounded once again. So, yeah, until next time, take care, everyone, and up the gas.
Up the gas.
Up the gas.